name is Tracy Coral, and I get to speak to you today about reaching kids with special needs. My husband and I are missions associates with Special Touch Ministry, which is a ministry that specifically serves the needs and concerns of individuals with disabilities. And we are typically the people that we get the number one question or response is, okay, so I've got a kid who? And you giggle because it's the truth. And that's okay, because that means you know that there's a need and you have a concern and you want to be able to help that child. So none of those things are bad things. But first, we're going to start with a few statistics. I always say that you might say, oh, I don't have any special needs kids in my church. I don't have any special needs people in my room. That's absolutely, most likely, not the truth. Because one in six children have some type of a disability. That's 17% of children. And this statistic kind of blew my mind. 30% of U.S. households are impacted by some type of disability. So the likelihood that you have a kid in your ministry, well, let me ask you a question. How many of you are all kids ministry? Okay. See, how many are kids ministry leaders, pastors, teens? My husband said he saw some of the teen people sneaking in there. That's awesome. Because here's the thing. Kids grow up. Right? So they are going to touch and hit every ministry in the church. So what you need to know is that the statistics get even more intense when you include the whole group. So over 65 million Americans have a disability. 65 million. Okay? That is one in five people. And the statistics are that over 80% of them do not attend church. And I'm sure if you think back to that statement that I just first made, I have a kid who explains usually a lot of that. Sometimes those parents are intimidated because they don't know that you will accept them, let alone value them. Then it becomes, I did bring them and an incident occurred. So we're not going to try that again. Or our families are struggling with so much just to get out of the house, to get to your kids' ministry or your teen ministry, and they don't have the opportunity to learn in there or grow or serve. So we lose our goal, which is my next... Well, what happened to my pictures? She's a little pixelated there. Our goals, every child should have the opportunity to know God, grow in him, and serve him with the gifts that he has given. All of my slides are available to you on Sketch, so they're uploaded for you if you want them. But here's the thing. I'm gonna give you a little testimony before I get into this further. I was just a first grade teacher. That was my job. I loved it. I loved the kids that I got to teach. I had worked in the field as a caregiver to two gentlemen with disabilities when I was in college, but this had never been a path in life I thought I was going to pursue. The directors of my ministry came to my church and asked for a team to come and serve at what they call a summer getaway, which is a camp for individuals with disabilities. This camp that I got to serve at, I worked with an individual. Her disability was an intellectual disability, but she was also nonverbal. So the majority of the week, she couldn't tell me what she's learning, what's sticking, what's not. And honestly, I had to walk her by holding her hand from place to place. She didn't participate unless I helped her to participate. And so by the end of that week, I sat in the evening service and I was just talking to God and saying, you know what, God, I have no idea what she's learned. I have no idea what she's been able to glean. I don't know where she is in her salvation. I don't know what opportunities, if she's had, to receive. And at the end of that service, they had asked some people to come up and pray at the altar with people. And again, I had led her from space to space all week long. And so she didn't move unless I moved. So she was sitting, and I had what was called a CIT, which is a caregiver in training. It's a teenager that can serve at our camps. And so she sat with her. I went up front, and I was praying with people at the altar. And I'm praying with a gentleman, and then I turn, and she's standing in front of me. And my CIT is standing behind her, and she said, I didn't bring her. And I started to pray over her, and I looked her in the eyes, and it was the first time she made eye contact with me all week. And she had the biggest smile on her face, and I told her how much God loved her and how precious that she was to him. And at that moment, she just smiled. And I knew, without a shadow of a doubt, God has her. He doesn't need her intellect. He doesn't need my intellect. He needs our hearts. And so every single person should have the opportunity to know God, to grow in him. And there isn't a single person on this earth that God doesn't have here for a plan or a purpose. And so they should have an opportunity to serve him. So here's the thing. That's all good and great, right? And it gives you all the feels and puts you in all the emotions. And you're, yes, wonderful. But how? Right? How do we do that? How do we get to a place that we can serve? How do we get to a place if they have intellectual disabilities, they're not understanding what we're delivering? What's some basic things that we can do? Well, the number one formula that I use is simple, concrete, repeat. And if you're in kids ministry, that formula is going to work for you across the board, because kids need the simple, right? You need to give them, what if you have a curriculum, it's what's the big idea or what's the bottom line, right? You have that because they need to know, when I leave this room today, what do you want me to know? Okay? And so you're going to keep that simple. You're going to make sure that everything you're doing is driving home that message. The next is concrete, you know, because the Bible's so concrete, right? It's not abstract at all, right? There's nothing. Simple. If you can feel it, touch it, see it, or smell it, no matter if you have a disability or not, your brain will understand it better. It will create memories that help you to understand. So one of the things I have right in front of me, when you can, here's a Bible story of Daniel in the lion's den. It's simple. It's interactive. When I open it and I read it, I've got a Velcro piece and I can participate in the story and tell it. But not only that, I can dig in my Bible box and I've got a lion and I've got this to create like my den, and I've got characters from the story that I can act it out and participate and play. Now, I can make noises, I can add to it however I want, I could create a whole scene. But when I can put the concrete, bring it out. When I taught first grade, I would say, okay, let's make the story jump out of the book. Like, let's bring it to life. That's why when you're teaching already, you're using videos and you're using songs and you're having the kids act things out and all of that kind of stuff. Here's the biggest thing that you need to know. And I apologize for this. I'm not going to tell you any earth-shattering things today. The majority of the things that I'm going to tell you are things you're A, already doing, or B, just common sense. Because what do we do with every kid that walks inside our ministry doors? You get to know them. And when you get to know them, you know what makes them tick. And when you know what makes them tick, you know how to connect with them. It's the same way. Here's the difference. When we have kiddos with special needs, it's almost like you feel like there's a barrier because they're different. There's something that is not just so-called normal. And so you feel like maybe you can't approach them the same way or you can't deliver something the same way. But the thing is, you open up as many opportunities to learning as possible by offering it through simple, concrete, repeat, and then opening up the five senses. Because it's giving you more opportunities to create those pathways to learn. And that's teaching through the modalities. The modalities are something you guys are already doing. That's kinesthetic, moving. How many of you have kids in your ministry that need to move? Okay? They need to move. So what do? We make games. We give them opportunities to get up from their seat to respond. We do all kinds of different things to get them moving. Here, those are opportunities that can be considered as well with kids with special needs and should be offered. We just have to be intentional about it. So listen, sometimes 1 week, one lesson is going to play into all that, and it's going to be so easy. And you're going to be like, listen, I can hit all the five senses. We're up, we're moving, we're hearing this, we're seeing this, we're playing music, all the things. And some weeks you're going to have to push real, real hard to get and pull some of that out. But those are going to be your simple things. All of my pictures are, I don't know what's going on. It looks pretty on there, doesn't it? No? What is wrong? I don't know what's up with it. It's okay, just imagine really cute kids. Okay? Just they're really cute, I promise. So when we move on to the next thing, I'm not going to, Liz can do what she's doing and we'll see what happens. But we're going to talk about some barriers. What are some extra barriers that you experience in your ministry when you're serving kids with special needs? And some of these barriers are going to exist for kids who aren't identified. How many of you are pretty sure there's a kid in your ministry that their parent has not told you, or maybe their parent doesn't know yet that there is a special need? You're pretty sure you're 100% serving. Do you know why that happens? They want to be accepted, right? They want them to be accepted. They don't want their child to be seen as different. They don't want their child to be excluded, okay? And then, you know what? If you don't recognize, maybe that just makes me feel a little bit better about where my child is, right? We're not facing it. Oh, see, he's cute. There we go. All right. So, what are some barriers? Attention. Listen, we live in an instant gratification world. It does not matter if they have special needs or not. Our kids are hard to keep focused. Here's the differentiation between kids who are identified with special needs and kids who are not. Preference and choice. If my son, who has ADHD, were to operate without his medicine, you would have to sit on him to get him to sit for a 30-minute time period to listen. It is not, you're right, if that. It's not an option to him. He just cannot do it. Now, if I had a choice, if you were going to entertain me or if I were just going to listen to you, what am I going to pick? I'm going to pick the entertainment. That's preferable. And what have we done to those kids? We've trained them to expect that. Those are two very different lanes. Preference, we're going to work together. You're going to give me a little, I'm going to give you a little of what you need. If I don't have an option, I'm going to find a way to accommodate you. I'm going to find a way to make you feel comfortable in the space that you're in. I'm going to find a way for you to be able to interact. Now, we do that with all of the kids, right? That's what the giving a little. But our understanding is very different. So, compliance. If I say, sit there, don't move, that's a wonderful thing for them to do so they can listen to you. But if I can't, I can't. You know, I'm not. It's a, you know, not a forced issue. Participation. Now, I say, let's use all the five senses. Let's get them up and moving. Let's do all the certain things. What if I have a sensory processing disorder, which means I hear sounds louder, I see lights brighter, things, and those things really, really bother me. But you say, okay, everybody, at my church, we have a gym. Everybody's going to the gym, and they're running, and they're crazy, and they're noisy. My kiddo with a sensory processing disorder is going to have a real hard time with that. Do I have options? I have options. I could earplugs, noise-canceling headphones, or we could create an optional activity, right? Or here's another thing. I came across a statement that said, are you willing to give up a good idea, even if it's really good, if you can't include everyone? There are really, really, really fun things that we all can do, but not everybody enjoys it. Not everyone receives from it. So we have to be able to consider, does this work or does this exclude? Next, learning. Different ways of learning, depths of learning. So what do we go back to? Simple, concrete, repeat. Does that mean that kids who learn at a greater depth won't learn? Can you do things? Can you build opportunities for them to discover and to read more and to go deeper? Yes. What do we do when we reach a group of people, right? We hit a baseline, right? Because there are people who are below there and there are people that are above there. And we have to teach our kids who are above there how to go there on their own. We can come alongside them in different ways. That's why we do small groups. That's why we do different ways of interacting. I used to do, as a first grade teacher, I would call it genius hour. And these kids, they love to investigate. They love to see bigger and better things, and they want to see how things work. And we talked about that, and they've got a million questions. So they had a designated time where they would go and investigate. Can you do that with the Bible? Can you do that with stories? Can you build that with history? Can you take that time to also do something different for other kids who may need to hear the same thing over again? You can. Small groups are an awesome way to do that kind of stuff. Distraction. Now, this goes in two ways. You have kiddos who get distracted, and you have kiddos who cause distraction, right? So those kiddos, they're communicating something through their behavior, right? And I'm sure you've all heard it. Behavior is a form of communication. And so if they are being distracted, this room, there's not much to look at, right? It's pretty plain. It's probably because they use it for multi-purposes, so it's not designated or decorated for a certain specific thing. But in our kids' rooms, we think the more, the better. But what does that do?
Distraction.
Right. So you have to pick and choose and tame it down so it becomes less of a distraction. Because a kiddo who can't necessarily control that distraction, listen, they're going to find, okay, so there are three blinds here. There are six doors. And then, there are panels in the wall. Like, they're going to find things. They're going to count your chairs. They're going to look at the guides back in their head. They're probably going to, you know, mess with the guy in front of them, whatever. They're going to find. So if we try to find ways to limit them in our spaces, that's going to help immensely. Those who become the distraction is most likely because they also can't control themselves in that moment, in the sitting, in the focusing, in the thing. So what do you have? You all got bags today. And in your bags, you have fidgets. So those are one tool. Listen, if every kid in the world had a fidget, they would want them, okay? However, those are tools because sometimes your body just needs some type of movement, and even the little bit of movement that it gets from those fidgets helps to focus. So I will give you an example. I had a gentleman that was at my church, and we were doing, our church did a huge production called the Passion Play at Easter time. And I was the stage manager, and that particular person, I had a bunch of kids at my door and I had to keep them all quiet, which was, well, you know. Right. But anyway, this guy is like, he's circling. And I said to him, hey, Sean, like, you're worse than the kids. You know, there he's walking circles, so they want to move and do all the things. And he said, listen, I can't. He said, I can't stand still. And then he explained to me, he said, listen, if I go into church on a Sunday morning and I sit in the chair and I listen to pastor, all I can think about is keeping myself still in the chair. He said, but if I stand at the back of the room and just move from foot to foot, he said, I could tell you word for word what pastor says. And that was an open eye moment of going, literally, that's all it took. He just needed movement in his body to be able to control his focus. Because when he couldn't have that movement, the only thing he could think about is not moving. So next, transitions. Transitions are hard for kids. Some is because I like this activity and you're asking me to do something that I don't. The other thing is some kids with certain disabilities get hyper-focused on something. So when you transition them from one thing to the next, it's difficult. So here's a couple things, warnings. All right, guys, 5 minutes. You could put a timer on your screen, whatever. There are sand timers, and it might even be, if you've ever seen like little ones for games, for an individual kid who needs to see it up close and personal, and you could put it right by them to help them move along. You could do, also because some kids that along with that would have maybe a sensory issue, and the beeping from a timer might bug them, so sand timers are quiet. There are also other visual, you can get them on Amazon. They just light up. It's a green light when you're good to go, red light when you need to stop, makes it, and that's an easy thing for them to see and know. Also, in and out of spaces. How many of you transition in and out of a room on a Sunday morning? Okay, oh, quite a few of you. Okay, that's hard. And sometimes it might be so-and-so are the volunteers in this room and they get along really well with them. But then when you switch to this room, it's a different kind of people and maybe that child might have a harder time with them. It could be any laundry list of reasons. But we've created before like a pencil box of preferred items in it that kind of they get to take it from that space to the next space. So they feel like I've got this comfort thing that I know what I'm allowed to do with it, and I can move on with that, and that helps to become a distraction in that moment, but also a bit of comfort. And it's simple. It's a dollar plastic pencil box, and I went to the Dollar Tree, and he liked superheroes and Legos that I just, you know, threw in there. So that becomes something easy. The other thing, and this is really more of a reminder than anything, is giftings. All people have some type of gifting from God. So as you're developing those gifts in all of your other students, don't forget that your kids with special needs, no matter how great their needs are, they have giftings and they can participate in the body of Christ. Okay, easy accommodations. Some of these we're gonna go through pretty quick because we've talked about them. Space. Creating space in your room to have options for different seating, to create a calm space. Some of you might say, listen, we have a small building. There's no room for a sensory room. There's no room for a place to go take a break or anything like that. You can create like a calming corner with a little tent if you need to, just to consider what space you do have and what works within it. Okay, the next thing, another easy accommodation, is consistency. If you have a basic schedule that you typically follow on a Sunday morning, stick to it as best as you can. Because if I'm a child who has focus and attention issues, if I get off track, I know what's next and I can fall right back into line. I don't have to be embarrassed. I don't have to create a scene or distraction because I'm lost. Okay, also a child who has some anxiety or difficulty just keeping up with whatever's going on, if I know what to expect, again, I can fall right back in. Okay, I know what's next. Well, we're at games, now we're gonna do worship next. Like, it just is a comforting thing. And we've had kids in our special needs ministry who have come in and they were like a hot mess at the beginning, but then because they got to know not only the people in the room, but they got to know how things work and how the expectations were and those kind of things. Fidgets we already talked about. Here's my public service announcement on fidgets. Fidgets are not for every kid, and that's okay. Kids will say to you, well, they have one, why can't I have one? And one of the things we specifically choose to teach our kiddos about how God made everyone and everyone is different, and that's absolutely okay. And we talk to them, we do what I call a Band-Aid lesson. I ask all of them to tell me somewhere they've been hurt. And then I go and I put a Band-Aid in the same spot on every single kid. And I said, if I were the doctor, did I do a good job? And they were like, no. They're like, right, because I treated you all the same. I didn't do what you needed. And so some kiddos are gonna need to sit in a different seat. Some kids are gonna need to take a break. Some kids are gonna need to use fidgets, and that's okay because that's the way their brain works, and we're gonna do whatever works for your brain. So kids are the most easiest moldable children to help understand one another. Okay? They will be more loving and kind and understanding than you and I will ever consider to be. They're just so good. You just have to be the lead. We talked about optional seating. These seats are great. You could do a wobble seat. There are blow-up things where you could just sit on the seat and it lets you wobble a little bit. There are rocking chairs or just sitting on the floor. Some of those sitting on the floor for some kids might be the worst thing you could ever do. But for another child, it might be perfect because they could kind of pretzel wrap up their legs and get all comfy on the floor and listen. And there is nothing wrong with setting expectations of what is okay and what is not okay within those seatings. So just remember that. What I tell everyone, because a lot of times our individuals with special needs, they get kind of the, oh, honey, it's okay. I know your life is so hard, and I'm just going to make it all okay for you. Pity is not where it's at, friends. Okay? Pity blocks someone's purpose. And when you open the door for pity, you say you are less than. I don't see your value. But when you have compassion, which builds understanding, it allows you to make these accommodations and not think, they don't really need that. It doesn't give you those prejudices against them because of their disability. It gives you understanding. So we got to come back to that. The other thing we're going to talk a little bit more about support in my next slide. Maybe. There we go. Through other more intensive accommodations, which I mentioned before, like a sensory room, a quiet room, or a buddy system. A sensory room is a place where they can build in all those sensories and have all those experiences. A quiet room is, listen, I got to get away from everything, and I need some quiet. And the last part is a buddy system where, listen, your child that's in there may have more intensive needs, which means that I, as the leader, can't support that child throughout that service, which means I'm going to need either a couple of things. One, I might just need an extra person in that room who understands the needs of that child and can step in when needed. Or it might be, I need someone who's going to be like a one-on-one, who's going to help them navigate the whole morning. The other option is I may need someone who is going to take them to the sensory room or to the quiet room or to be able to teach them in a different way because they're not learning even with all the accommodations within the services that we have. So those are some options. Again, those are more intensive. We always start with the least and work our way up. Okay, so here's some, we're skipping. Where'd it go? There's a missing one. Tools for your tool belt. First, we need to know, we're going to skip that one. I don't know what happened. There we go. Okay, so if things start to get a little difficult in your space, okay, you notice that the child's starting to get upset, you're going to need to put some things in place to help. So first of all, you need to beware of your own body language. Listen, if I stood up here and what I was telling you, I was yelling at you and I was telling you you're all terrible people and all things are horrible, it sets a very different tone, right? So if I'm already upset about something and it's really something that's out of my control, and then you come at me like you're angry because I'm not behaving in the way that you expect me to, is it going to escalate the situation or is it going to help? It's going to escalate. So always be aware of your body language and how you are responding. I'm going to give away one of our problem solving things. So we'll skip this one. And a little guy who he is diagnosed with autism. When he first came to our church, he hated loud noises, but he would not wear earplugs and he would not wear the noise canceling headphones, which is fine. We did quiet worship and our volunteers were very aware and, you know, we just didn't do the whole yelling bit. But listen, one Sunday, they were trying to bring the walls of Jericho down. And it got a little loud, and he got real upset and started screaming. So I heard him. I walked into the room to check on him, and he thought, I'm in trouble. And then I went over to him, and I was like, hey, buddy, I think your ears need a break. And he was like, yeah. And it changed the whole course of everything, because he was like, she gets it. Like, she understands. She's not going to yell at me for yelling. She knows how I feel. And that turned the corner for everything. He now wears his headphones, and he's happy as a lark while everybody else is screaming. And he's a part of everything. It doesn't matter. And then he just screams along with them. So it's all good. The walls of Jericho come down every Sunday. But anyway, the next thing is, if sometimes in the moment when things get a little tense, sometimes all you need to do is distract. And you guys, as children's pastors or volunteers, you're already doing, right? A kid gets, you're asking for prayer time and somebody's cat died 5 years ago. And it's probably the neighbor's cat. It's not even theirs, right? And the tears are getting ready to start. What do? You're not diving in talking about the cat, right? You're going to distract from it. You're going to acknowledge it. You're going to validate it, but you're moving on. So offer a movement break or walk. Sometimes it's just like, hey, do you need a break for a second? Maybe the noises are getting loud. Maybe something's going on in the space that they just need to retreat from and then kind of collect themselves and bring themselves back. I suggest timers for that. That helps get the child back in the room easier. Sometimes you might need to just decrease the stimulation. In the moment when those things are going on, you might have to avoid saying no. Why? Because we're building in a little bit of tension. And if I say no, then I'm creating more tension. That doesn't mean I'm giving in to something they're asking for if it's not the right thing. Next, you're going to use maybe some kind of calming visual input. Maybe you have something in the room. Maybe it's a calming poster. Maybe it's a smiley. Tell me where you're at. Tell me where we want to go. How do we get there? Let's talk about how you're feeling. Those kinds of things. Belly breathing, just taking some deep breaths. Relax. We always tell the joke, our son, we went to see a neuropsych when my son was younger, and I thought, you know, she was going to cure it all. She was going to give me like the magic bullet, and I was going to walk out of there. It was going to be the most fantastic mother ever. And then she's teaching him how to breathe. I'm like, when he's in fight or flight, we're not breathing. Okay? It's not happening. So for some kids, it's going to work, and that's why you have multiple strategies. For some kids, things work. For some kids, things don't. Offer a preferred activity. Maintain your calm. We're going back to that. Use visual schedules. I have some examples of those up here you guys can peek at when we're done. We use this for our camp, and we could use this on a Sunday morning. Why? Because I know what's happening next, so that makes me feel calm. I know I don't like this, but this is coming, so that's okay. We can get through it. All right, so next, positive communication, get down on their level. These are all strategies you guys already know. Validate their feelings, but not their actions. Okay, being able to say, I see that you're upset. But you're not telling them that whacking their friend next to them was a great idea. Okay, you're not telling them, you're not feeling this way, you shouldn't feel this way, you're overreacting, this is not okay. That's not going to help anybody. Recognizing their right to refuse. If they are stuck in something and they don't want to do it and they don't want to participate, we're not a school, we're not in a clinical setting. If you want to say, you know what, if you don't want to do that and you'd like to take a break over here in the corner, go ahead and do that. You're not becoming a distraction. You're not hurting anybody else. Go take a break, and that's okay. So here is the end all be all of the when it gets difficult. Okay, because this is the most fearful place of all of us. What happens when things get so out of control that none of those strategies work? What do I do? You're going to not try to use reason or logic because they're not going to hear it. You are going to avoid making demands. You're not going to yell or scream. You're going to validate their feelings and not their actions. You're going to respect their personal space because if you don't, you might get hit. Be aware of your body language and facial expressions. And let's be honest, if you're upset and you're yelling, you're angry, and I come over in your face, is that going to help you? Is that going to hurt you? No. I mean, that's reasonable for all of us, right? So you keep that space. Be aware of yourself. And when all else fails, if safety becomes an issue for that child or any of the other people in the room, you're going to remove those kids from the room. You're going to clear the space that you're in, give them a safe space to have their moment, and you're going to get their parent or their caregiver. because it's now moved past a point at which you should handle and you need some intervention. And that's absolutely okay, because that is for the safety of everyone in that room, okay? And there, you remove for a couple of reasons. When you remove the rest of the kids from the room, it's you take the attention off the child. One, it could be attention-seeking behavior, or two, they're having a behavior and then they become embarrassed because they've had a behavior and everybody's watching them, which then increases the tension that's going on, okay? So those are your big, big things you want to look at. Real quick, I am going to, I'm going to tell you what's in your folders. So I gave you all folders for some resources that you have, because when we go to churches and we do trainings, we typically do at least an all-day training. So fitting what I would love to tell you all in this session is small. So I wanted to give you some resources and let you know, on the one side where you see the white paper, that is it. You have an intake form there. That intake form is you meet a new family, they check in at your check-in desk, you find out there are some special needs, and then you call mom and dad and you say, hey, do you guys have some time this week? I'd love to know more about your family. And then you get to ask them questions about what works for their child, what doesn't work for their child, what helps them feel happy, what helps them feel calm. And so those are just a group of questions that you can go through and ask. The second paper you have there is like a lesson plan template. You can take any curriculum that you have that exists, and it helps you boil that down into that simple, concrete repeat, but using as many senses as possible to incorporate the learning. On one sides of those are some biblical scripture that you can look at, what God says about people with disabilities. And then you have a de-escalation reminder sheet, and then a transitions cheat sheet. It's a lot of stuff, but you can look at it at your leisure. I just wanted to give you as much as I possibly could to have that. On the other side, we offer a free training on April 20th. It's an all-day training. It costs you absolutely nothing to come. The only thing that you have to do is either bring a lunch or buy a lunch. And so the information's on there with the link to register if you are interested. It's in Youngstown, Ohio, which is where our home church is. But it's, like I said, it's absolutely free, and we have a full day of learning, and you get to choose your sessions and things that you'd like to learn about. You could bring yourself, you could bring your whole team. So we would love to have you for that. Also, real quick, there is some camp information. The camp that I told you about that I got to do early on in ministry, we actually have here in Ohio. So we do a week-long camp. If you know anyone who might be able to attend, you have that. Or if you are interested and would like to volunteer, we need volunteers. And we also have a place for teenagers to volunteer, which is the CIT paper. So that's what's all in your folder. Real quick, I'm going to introduce you to two of my friends. So they're going to come on up here. This is Jenna and Summer. They're part of the team where I serve at my home church. If they quit, I'm done. Okay? It's as simple as that. Background is, Summer is an RN, so she has lots of experience in the medical field that helps. She's just a wealth of knowledge. And she is one of the most patient, kind, compassionate, understanding people. And this is Jenna, who I've known, unfortunately, I was her youth leader at one point. So we're not old. I mean, I'm not. She's not. Jenna is a mom of two. She's worked in a preschool. She is taken on what was going to be the preschool director there. And she has worked with kiddos forever. And she is, whenever I'm not, if we're traveling and visiting churches on a Sunday, Jenna is my backup. She takes care of everything and I don't have to think about it, because she's just that fantastic. What they are going to do, and we'll probably just split side by side, they are going to bring you some problems and solutions. Well, she's going to bring you the problem. You're going to come up with the solution. Okay? So, Jenna, you want to take this side? Summer, you want to take this side? And they're just going to give you a brief scenario, and then you guys are going to tool it out as if it were your scenario on a Sunday morning. Okay?
Do you want to kind of reiterate? Okay. So you're at church on Wednesday night. You guys are all in the same room. and the children around him. He's shredded all the papers that he has, his shoes are cut off, and he looks somebody with a brace, so he can hurt somebody. She's watching, how long will it be your first thoughts, and how would you manage?
Not all at one time.
Well, I didn't get up and go for a walk. That was kind of one of our first thoughts on that. How do we make sure that he's not going to do that yet? Like, he wants to leave the rep, so he has to not be able to leave. He has to stay, but it is a good thought. It's like one of our first thoughts. How can people go with her? Yeah, so they're including her. Perfect. And now,
right, is that going to shadow with her? So that way, if someone does get hit, it's not going to be.
Yeah. Like Tracy said, you validate their feelings. You know, she obviously wants to be included. Not the behavior.
Okay. Okay. So on the paper, there's the our national website. You can go on the website. And then you can email me.
Have a hard time sitting on the floor with the kids and like just doing what we're doing. But if he sits at the table with some paper and some crayons and he just does that, like he's still listening to what we're saying.
Sometimes that's what they need to.
Yeah, we had a little guy, the transition box that I mentioned earlier. If he had that transition box and he would fiddle in it and he would build Legos the whole time, and our children's pastor would be asking questions and under his breath, he's answering every single one. He's hearing every single thing that she's saying. And it was like, or we have one of those, like it's a giant chalk wall. So while she's telling the Bible story, he's over there drawing it out. So like it's what he needs to get his body moving so that it can listen. And most of us, I grew up in old school home. You sit in the chair, you look at someone when you're listening, and that's what respect is, right? But the thing is, again, we go back to what's a preference and what, you know, like, do I just prefer to be able to move? Listen, I'm a teacher. We're the worst listeners in the world. For me to sit and listen to someone is really, really hard. But I can, because I have the skills to cope with what I need to do it, as opposed to I physically cannot do what someone is asking me to do. There's a very big difference.
What else could you do?
All right, when you guys finish.
It sounds like it's one of my kids, but it's because they're distracted by the
personal relationship because you know what's going on with them.
Why don't we ask him? What's wrong? Are you okay?
Always.
Maybe he doesn't like to do
anything on the bar and ask. You know what I mean? Because they might be able to
judge. You're done. We have to do question and answers. Okay.
Really frustrating. You know, so that's when knowing our kids, and if we don't know, then
ask. Yes.
So
where you did your scheduling for today, that you have the option to get whatever notes or anything like that from today, and the slides are on there. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. And you also all have in your folder is a card. It is a makeshift card of our prayer card because we ran out. But it has our email on it. So if you have any questions, this kind of training we do in individual churches. A lot of people say, you know, well, how much does that cost? First of all, I get to be a missionary and that's my job. So I get to come to you. It's not about what you can pay me. So if your church is wanting and needing this and you can bring it to all of your volunteers because we can come to you, let me know the date and I'll be there. This is what we live to do. This is what God's called us to do. The next thing I wanted to tell you, if you want to come take a quick look up here later, I have some examples of like the Bible boxes that we do, some other sensory lessons. And this was a free curriculum that I printed off just to show you. Free is always good. And then some visual schedules. And we also have sensory bags that we just make available at our check-in desk. And we also make it available in the classroom so that if a need arises, we're not scrambling to find something. It's just always there. When we did VBS this summer, I gave every lead teacher a bag. So they just had it. And it just made things so very easy. So you are welcome to come look at that.